CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.
You are listening to the only destination for local music, sports, and news, CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
Good morning, it is 11 a.m. on Friday, August 9th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be running over some new updates for Writers Fest 2024, the upcoming introduction of the Wolf Islander 4 into full-time ferry service, the fall relocation of the KFPL Isabel Turner branch, and what's left of the Kick and Push Fringe Festival. Kingston Writers Fest has found a new home base for this year's festival after 15 years at the Holiday Inn. At the Writers Fest launch party last week, it was announced that the festival plans to spread throughout downtown Kingston this year, with the Screening Room serving as the primary venue. The Independent Theatre, a beloved landmark in the heart of the city and home to the best popcorn in town, is known for its unique, down-to-earth atmosphere, and will be host to on-stage author events, the festival bookshop, and the box office during the 16th annual festival in September 2024. Other event locations this year include the Mansion, Confederation Place Hotel, Something in the Water Brewing Company, and the Delta. In a release, KWF stated, quote, "With the focus in 2024 being connection, conversation, and creation, the festival encourages readers and writers to immerse themselves in the vibrant heart of the city, with events being held throughout downtown," end quote. I sat down with Ara McCulley, artistic director for this year's Writers Fest, to discuss the upcoming event and these new announcements. There are some pretty big changes this year, including a new home base after 15 years at the Holiday Inn. How did the Screening Room enter the conversation to be the venue for this year?
Well, I'll say, there's been a lot of changes. We're always evolving as a festival, and I'll say that post-COVID, things have changed quite a bit for us. And some of that has meant the size of the audience that we have. There's pros and cons with that, but one of the pros is that with smaller audiences, we were able to explore new venues. And one of the things we've really been focusing on, I think, since we came back with live programming in 2022 is the idea of really celebrating this amazing community that we're a part of. And so when it became a possibility that we could use the Screening Room, we were all really excited about that. We really want the festival to feel like you're going to an event, right? You're not going to a convention center. You're not sitting on a folding chair. You're actually it's exciting. It's like the excitement of going to the movies. And we wanted to kind of capture some of that for the festival as well as really getting the festival in the heart of downtown Kingston and celebrating the amazing independent locations that we have here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Screening Room, it's a nonprofit and it's definitely a beloved landmark here in Kingston. Mm-hmm. How do you think this location change is going to impact the festival in terms of, both that location right downtown, the space available within the Screening Room, and just the energy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the energy is one of the things I'm really excited about. The feedback I've been getting from people, as I've mentioned this, is a lot of excitement. As you say, the Screening Room is known and loved. It's already established as an arts hub. It hosts Reel Out, it hosts KCFF. So there's that. People are used to going there for cultural events. It's got the best popcorn in town, which doesn't hurt either. I think what it's going to do is really enhance that sense of intimacy that we go for with the festival. We want the festival to feel relaxed, to feel immersive. We want people in the audience to feel like they're a part of something special and that they really get the opportunity to know the author well. One of the fabulous things that we're working on is having a pop-up novel idea right downstairs in the main lobby of the screening room. So I know we're not far from the actual Novel Idea bookstore, but people won't have to leave the building to buy their books this year either, which I think like that was a big thing for us. So, you know, we do have some offsite locations for some of the events that we know are going to be really big. But we've tried to keep them all within walking distance and just, I think it'll be a lot of fun for people to kind of explore downtown.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I couldn't think of a better place, honestly. And I was wondering if you could get into some of the events that will be hosted within the screening room this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So opening night, we have a great conversation between local artist Jermaine Marshall, also known as Jay Marsh. He's a local poet, spoken word, and musical performer. He's going to be talking with Danny Ramadan. Danny is an amazing human being. He fled Syria as a refugee because he was being persecuted for his sexuality. Then he came to Canada, and since he's been here, he's raised over $300,000 for LGBTQ plus refugees. He's been sainted. He's written 7 books. So he's got a memoir out this year, and it's a really, really fascinating read. And, you know, he's a very kind human, but he also doesn't pull his punches. So I think it'll be challenging for the reader in the idea of, like, you know, Canada, yeah, it's a better place in some ways than where he came from, but it's not all just sunshine and roses, and like there are some really hard things about having to leave the home that you love, even if it is problematic. So yeah, that's Wednesday night. Thursday evening, we're really excited, we have Tanya Talaga. Tanya is an award-winning author of 7 Fallen Feathers, and she has created this incredible indigenous focused look at Canadian history from the perspective of her great-great-grandmother on. So it looks at, it's a look at generational trauma. It's a look at the history that we've buried and the history that we're uncovering now, called The Knowing. It's not all intense, heavy things, though. We have a really fun Saturday morning event based around this book called Secret Sex. So a couple dozen Canadian authors wrote anonymous sex stories for this book. Not something that you necessarily think of Canadian writers doing, but we'll have a few of the authors on stage as well as the person who put together the anthology. And people who are reading will be reading their favorite stories, not the ones they wrote. So I think it'll just be a little bit of fun. Saturday night, we have The Big Idea. That's one of our marquee events. And we're looking at the fate of democracy in North America. Not a small topic, but with the U.S. election looming and with a Canadian one not far behind, I think that'll be really, really timely. We've also got some great food events. We've got our writer's retreat workshops are back. And then our programming in schools for kids and our high school programming as well. So yeah, there's still, you know, we're a little more compact this year, but there's still tons of excellent programming for people to check out.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you had your launch party last night, and you mentioned you got some feedback on these events and the new location and everything. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, it's always really great because, you know, you're working in a vacuum most of the year, or, you know, and we've been working at home for most of this. And so it's really nice to actually like share it with people outside your office and see what they say. We have a beautifully designed program this year. I'm really, really proud of it. And the illustrations for our posters and all of our creative is by Hayden Maynard, who's a local artist, which is amazing. So I think like the design is really, really strong this year. And yeah, as I mentioned before, a lot of people were really, really excited. We got a lot of cheers when I mentioned the screening room. And I think people were excited about the programming we have here too. We're trying to keep it really relevant and topical to what people are really thinking about right now.
McCulley also discussed how the festival has changed since the pandemic. and how this change in venue is part of KWF adapting to the post-COVID festival landscape.
You mentioned we're moving to a bit more of a compact venue, so that's sort of due to numbers being a bit down after COVID. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, in talking with colleagues, I mean, I'm part of the Canadian Association of Literary Festivals. So, you know, we had a conference about this actually just in the spring. And I think like there hasn't been a normal since 2019. And I think a lot of us were not sure what things were going to look like as we came back. I think, you know, there was expectations of like, okay, we're going to see a drop in tickets, but then it's going to come back up. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. You know, funding has been cut as well. So, you know, there have certainly been some challenges in those ways. And part of that is realizing that the festivals we put on in 2019 aren't what we are going to be able to put on in like 2024 and beyond. So, I mean, at the end of the day, our priority is creating a great festival for our audiences and creating a great experience for our artists. So it's looking at like, where can you creatively cut costs without cutting the quality of the program that you're presenting to people?
Yeah, for sure. So, and we're set to have an amazing year this year, though. We have a dedicated writers and reader community here in Kingston, and
absolutely,
awesome new venue and lots of excitement this year. So that should be great. And how are you feeling walking into the 16th season?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to see like how the festival's evolved, you know, from sort of my little involvement with it back in 2014 when I first started to seeing it now. It's incredible the amount of support and the people that have been behind the festival since day one. It's amazing to see like how the Kingston arts community like continues to be so strong. Like, you know, we programmed, I think, about a dozen local authors this year, and that was not even like everyone that's published this year, right? So it's like, it's a good problem to have, but it's amazing to be able to see that creative spark and that that group of artists is still going strong here in Kingston.
The actual festival is in September, which is coming up quick. How can folks start preparing, get their reading list together, and figure out what events they'd like to go to?
Yeah, so we have, as well as a new venue, we have a completely brand new website, which I'm so happy about. That's been many, many years of wishing. If you visit kingstonwritersfest.ca, you can take a look at the program there and purchase tickets. We do have an actual reading list, which includes all of the authors and all of their books that people can download from the website to kind of get you ready, as well as where you can reserve your books at the library for it. We also have started distributing our physical program guide. So if you visit Novel Idea or the Screening Room, the libraries, and a lot of other places downtown, you can pick up your guide there and figure out your schedule.
Once again, that was R. McCulley, Artistic Director for Writers Fest, sitting down with CFRC to talk about this year's upcoming 16th season. As McCulley stated, to learn more, you can visit their website at kingstonwritersfest.ca. Physical copies of this year's program guide can also be found at local libraries, the Screening Room, Novel Idea, Indigo, and the Tourist Information Center. By the end of the summer, those voyaging between Wolf Island and Kingston can expect a quieter, smoother ride with a reduced carbon footprint, as after over 2 years of anticipation, the Ministry of Transportation is preparing to transition the Wolf Islander 4 to full-time service. Originally, it was announced that the new ferry would enter full-time service in early 2021, but that timeline has continued to be delayed due to construction delays and crew shortages. As of August 17th, 2024, the Wolf Islander 4 will be replacing the Wolf Islander 3, which has been in operation since 1976. This comes at a crucial time as the Wolf Islander 3 has been experiencing frequent mechanical issues as of late, causing many trip delays and cancellations. Some travelers experienced the Wolf Islander 4 on a few surprise trips throughout last summer while the previous edition was being repaired. According to the release from the ministry announcing the transition, the new ferry is one of the first electric passenger and vehicle ferries in North America.
At 98 meters long, the Wolf Islander 4 can carry up to 399 passengers and 75 vehicles. A large increase from the Wolf Islander 3 with a maximum capacity of 294 passengers and up to 55 vehicles. The first trip of the day will depart Wolf Island at 5 a.m. and the last trip will depart Kingston at 2:20 a.m. with an initial round trip schedule every 80 minutes. The Wolf Islander 4 will carry 500 more vehicles per day. The new ferry will initially be operating out of the Dawson Point dock on Wolf Island, but the ministry is working to open the Marysville terminal as soon as possible. According to the ministry, work is also underway on charging and docking infrastructure improvements to enable the Wolf Islander 4 to make more frequent trips in the future. The Kingston Frontenac Public Library, KFPL, has announced that their busiest branch, the Isabel Turner branch, will be closed in fall 2024 for major building updates. Located at 935 Gardner's Road, the Isabel Turner branch was constructed in 1997. With the advancements made in library services, technology, community needs, and accessibility standards over the past 27 years, the building is due for an upgrade. In June 2023, the city issued a request for proposals for the project, which was awarded to VG Architects, a firm with expertise in designing and renovating library spaces. The budget for this project is approximately $4.9 million. With $300,000 allocated to costs associated with relocation. Due to the scope of the work, the branch is expected to close in fall 2024. During the closure, they will temporarily relocate to the Cataraqui Center at 945 Gardner's Road to ensure continuous library services for the community. CFRC sat down with Kristen LeMay, Manager of Projects and Strategic Initiatives with KFPL, and asked her what kind of improvements are being made to the space.
So this branch has been an important community hub in the West End, and we're really excited to revitalize this space to enhance accessibility and functionality. The Isabel Turner branch was built in 1997, so it's time to update important systems like the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. In addition to these facilities upgrades, we will be refreshing the space, so you'll be seeing some new furniture and carpeting as well.
Do you have a specific timeline for how long this can take or where folks can kind of keep up with developments on this?
So the project is slated to start in fall of this year. And for developments and timelines, I'd like to direct people to KFPL's website, where we have a page set up for sharing information about the renovation. So that page will continue to be updated as we have more details to release about the project and expected timelines.
Awesome. Sounds good. This is the largest library branch that we have. So where will these services be located in the meantime, and what changes can people expect come September when reconstruction starts?
We'll be setting up a temporary branch at the Cataraqui Center in late fall 2024. We're happy to be in a nearby location where patrons can still make use of public transit and there's parking available. In the temporary space, we will have a small browsing collection, room for reservations, and we'll also have some computer stations.
Is there anything that's going to be altered, like maybe less access to books or anything like that? Or is it all going to be same old, but in a new spot?
So the temporary space will be considerably smaller than the Isabel Turner branch. So we will have a small browsing collection, but it will be a different experience than the Fuller branch, certainly. And patrons can continue to come into the current branch, the Isabel Turner branch, to enjoy the spaces and services that we have until it closes this fall. Mm-hmm. The temporary branch will be opening later in the fall, and we're aiming to minimize the disruption to patrons' routines. We also have a digital collection that's available 24/7. So if you're looking to read an ebook, listen to an e-audiobook, listen to music, watch a movie, you can access all of these materials from your device, whether you are at home or out on the go.
Once again, that was Kristen LeMay with KFPL sitting down with CFRC to talk about the Isabel Turner branch closure starting in fall 2024. For more information and updates on the project, you can visit the Engage KFPL website. After debuting the TK Theo Fringe course, Queen's Dance School of Drama and Music students will be presenting pieces at the TK Fringe Festival for the first time. TK Fringe has been part of the Kick and Push Theater Festival since it began, making space for outside-the-box theater in the arty, innovative festival. TK Theo Fringe, also known as Course Drama 339, was hosted for the first time at the dance school in the fall 2023 semester by Fringe researcher Thea Fitzjames in collaboration with Theater Kingston.
In the course, students learned from experienced Fringers, studied the history of Fringe theater, and ultimately created their own Fringe shows to present at the end of the course. Using what they learned, six students chose to present their shows for the TK Fringe Festival taking place from August 1st to 11th, making them the first Dan School of Drama and Music students to participate in the festival. I sat down with four of the Dan School students presenting their shows at TK Fringe, Kathleen Greening, Sarah Starling, Jonas Jacobson, and Caitlin Luoma, to chat about their experience in the course and the creation of their first Fringe pieces.
Would you like to all introduce yourselves and the project you're bringing to Fringe this year?
Sure. My name is Sarah Starling, and I'm the playwright for the show The End of the Line.
I'm Caitlin Luoma, and I wrote Knowing Riley.
I am Jonas Jacobson, and I am the creator of Just Add Another Lane.
I'm Kate, or Kathleen Greening, and I wrote The Cape is Red as Blood.
Awesome. And you guys all took this TK Fringe class that's being offered at Queens. Did you know about TK Fringe before getting into it, or was it kind of a mystery before you got involved?
I didn't know about TK Fringe because I hadn't spent very many summers in Kingston, but I knew about Toronto Fringe and Edmonton Fringe and that the festival existed, but I didn't know there was one in Kingston.
Yeah, I had heard of the TK Fringe before, but I had never had a show in it. And I'm not sure that any dance school students, current students, had ever had shows in TK Fringe before.
Yeah, I knew about the TK Fringe just because I was friends with people who were working the Kick and Push Festival last summer, which oversees the TK Fringe. But was all my knowledge of Fringe going in.
Yeah, I knew about the TK Fringe just last year because I was here for the summer working with the Barefoot Players at Queens. And so, I was around and knew that there were shows going on, but I actually wasn't able to see any, so.
Nice. Okay, so pretty new for all of you. And this might be something that you guys covered in the first day of class, or you might all have kind of different answers, but how would you define Fringe theater? Because there's definitely some out there stuff in Kick and Push, some stuff that's really unique, but we also still have this separate Fringe section, fringe within the fringe. So I was wondering if you could speak a bit to what defines that genre of theater for you.
It's kind of hard to describe, which is sort of the whole point of it, I guess. It's branded as uncensored and uncurated. So people are sort of randomly selected to have their shows put in the fringe, which means it can essentially be anything. You get some musicals, you get one-person shows, you can get large ensembles. You can kind of get anything. And because it's completely random, you get shows about entirely different topics. So it makes it quite difficult to describe, but I suppose that's sort of the point of it.
Yeah, and I think something that we're used to as students is being pretty scrappy about the projects that we make. And I think Fringe really lends itself to that just because you're working with a small team and there's limited resources, and it's just kind of a do what you can and get things together and put on a show type of festival, which is something that we do as students. So it's interesting to see those similarities.
One thing I really enjoy about Fringe is it's uncensored. You can just kind of take it in whatever direction you want. It's just nice to have the creative control of your own project, even if it's something weird that no theater company would ever pick up. It gives you a platform for that. And yeah.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's about following your creative passion because of all the things everyone's been saying that's uncurated, uncensored, all that kind of stuff, which allows people to kind of fully express what kind of work they want to put out into the world. And so that's always super interesting because you get to see what people really want to tell you.
Yeah, for sure. You kind of got into it there, but what kind of excited you about being able to take a Fringe class specifically as opposed to, your traditional theater or even some of the more out there stuff at Kick and Push?
I was drawn to it because I really enjoyed the courses at Queens where you got to make something or there was a big practical aspect of it. I like learning about theater and everything, but I'm definitely not an academic. I really like to apply the stuff I learn. So that was a big draw for me, and I didn't know much about Fringe, as I said. So that was also a big interest to me. But if I'm being honest, the main draw was the professor, Thea, who I just love. and I wanted to take as many courses as I could. So that was the main thing for me, to be honest.
Yeah, my first interaction with Thea was auditioning. She ran the Barefoot Players summer camp that Kate mentioned. I auditioned for that. And instead of a children's monologue, I did I recited Grimes' What I Eat in a Day YouTube video, which did not land me the job. but Thea emailed me after and said, you should take my Fringe class. I would love to see you make a Fringe theater piece.
Yeah, I think for me, it was partially what Sarah was saying, that Thea is just a great professor and I really wanted another class with her. But it was definitely also that with Fringe Theater, it's one of the cheapest ways to make theater, especially independent theater, and to like produce your own work, because like the theater scene is kind of expensive. And so Fringe kind of, I thought, would be a great way to be able to produce my own work or to work on other people's work without the financial drain. And so that kind of made me interested in Fringe Theater and to learn more about it.
Yeah, for sure. And Caitlin, did you have anything there?
Yeah, I'll just add that a lot of our application in the program is through extracurricular activities and less so through our courses. Like, we have a lot of academic courses, and of course there are moments where we can apply our learning in class, but so much is what we do working on the productions. And so this was a unique class where we got to make a production as part of our grade, which was really enticing, I thought.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure this was a bit different for all of you, but like you were saying, it's kind of scrappy and thrown together. That's kind of the nature of Fringe. But what was that process of starting from day one, walking into this classroom, to now arriving and presenting your show at TK Fringe this year?
It was kind of crazy, I suppose, because walking into the first class, I didn't know what to expect. Obviously, I knew it was about Fringe, but I didn't really know what that entailed. And then we came in and Thea sort of laid out the timeline of like, this is sort of the idea of when you'll have your title by and then your description, and then you'll have a dress run for the class. And then here are when we're going to have performances. And then it reached the end of the term, which was all very daunting to do within a semester. But as we got the ball rolling and people were helping each other out, it was easier. But then I don't think most people expected to go from doing that class to wanting to do TK Fringe in the summer. I had no plans of doing it. I know. So I guess a lot of people just had such a great experience in that course and then saw that it was actually viable and was something that did interest them to do again in a more real capacity outside of course and actually in a Fringe festival. So then, I guess moving into doing TK Fringe, it was nice because it felt like we sort of had a leg to stand on because we had an idea of what we were going with. And some people kept the shows they did from class. Some people completely rewrote things and tried something new. It's definitely overwhelming, but very exciting to go from the course to the actual festival and seeing what changed and what people learned and brought to TK Fringe outside of the class. Yeah.
It's really exciting that half of us that took the class that are in the Fringe now did the shows that we created in the class, but then the other half have like written something completely new. So I think that speaks to Thea's ability as a professor to not just inspire us to create one piece, but now we have the confidence to be able to participate in Fringes with new work too, or develop works that we have in progress. So I think that just speaks to her and the class itself.
And it's so great to have a professor. She's also performing in the Fringe, so it's nice to be able to see what your professors are capable of. That's something you don't get to see often. A lot of professors talk about their work, but they don't show it, which I think is really interesting in theater when the whole point is you're in the space. So it was just a nice change of pace to see her perform at our mini Fringe Festival for class, and then she's performing in this one. It's really nice to just be able to see how she applies her teachings to her practice.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of crazy, like as Sarah was illustrating, that going from like going into a class with nothing and then having to leave that class with like a show is wild. And that whole process kind of, I think, at least for me, I think it was kind of the way for a lot of people, is that it kind of emboldened you to just do whatever and to just try things out. Because like in that situation, like we just had to like choose something and stick with it, and whether it worked or not, like we were going to perform it and people were going to see it. And I think that's very Fringe, where you kind of just need to really go for it and hope that either people enjoy it or maybe hope that people hate it. I don't know. And so I think that really was helpful for me, because it kind of helped inspire me to just not care as much about other people's opinions, or if I fail, I can kind of like take that step out into the unknown and just try. And if it fails, that's fine. And that was really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you put it all together in a matter of 8 to 12 weeks, pretty much.
Yeah. Pretty much.
No, yeah. Basically.
That is quick turnaround. And what was one key kind of takeaway, just to kind of go full circle in this course over your 12 weeks there?
I think my biggest takeaway was just like, you can do it, which maybe sounds stupid, but I don't know. I think in my experience in theater, I've always been sort of a background part of it. I've always done the behind the scenes and the production, and I've never performed. I never had that much experience writing. And this was the first class where I sort of had a prof. Usually in classes where we do have a practical aspect like this, I find usually they tell you, like, you can do a performance, or if you're not comfortable with that, you can write an essay instead, or make a podcast, like something where you don't really have to be on the front lines, I guess. And this was the first class where that was sort of the goal of it. And so that was something that definitely scared me a little bit. But also by the end of it, kind of as we've been saying, like, you didn't really have a choice. You were in the class. You just had to do it. And I found by the end of the course, I was sort of like, I was really scared in the beginning, but it was fine. And I did it. And I'm proud of what I made. So that was a really good experience for me, at least. And I walked away from it, obviously wanting to do TK Fringe and feeling like I was capable of that, where I think as in the past, I would have been like, oh, that's not for me. Like, I don't know how to do Fringe theater. I've never seen it. I've never participated. But yeah, it was just something I was sort of like, hell yeah, let's give it a try and give it a go, and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that sentiment of you can do it is definitely something that all of us walked away with. In a lot of our courses, we practice things like design and writing and just different, like, more practical components. But besides our extracurriculars, there's a lot of fear around, like, are we going to find professional opportunities doing these things? Playwriting and directing is, like, that's what I'm doing for the show that I have in the TK Fringe. And those are two things that it's really hard to break into the industry and find professional opportunities in those things. But being in this class and learning about Fringe from Thea, it really gave me the confidence and just opened my eyes to the fact that you can write a play and produce it in a Fringe festival. And like Kate was saying, it's one of the cheapest ways and most manageable ways to do that. So now knowing that these are ways that we can produce our own work is just probably the biggest thing that I took away. And like last year, the TK Fringe Festival had no dance school student participants. This year, a third of the shows are participants from the dance school. So I think that just really speaks to that sentiment that Thea instilled in all of us.
I would, to build off the kind of scrappiness of it all, Thea taught me theater admin as well that semester. And I think overall that semester, she just taught me that you can do it. If you want to make a project, it's all about willing it into existence, putting in the work, because there will be the grants, there will be the platforms if you're willing to do the digging. And it might be hell to find, but they're all there. There are a lot of grants that go unclaimed. There's a lot of opportunities with different fringes around the country if you're willing to relocate for them. There's just so many different avenues you can take to making theater besides the traditional ones. And I'm really grateful for, because sometimes we're in our degree, we're really told that, but they focus on showing us how to make it in the industry, like traditionally. Thea really taught me that you don't have to take traditional routes. And though that's something that was always told to me, I don't think it was ever shown to me before her.
Yeah, I think for me, it's something that kind of echoes what people have been saying is that, like, just to try, because I feel like a lot of people get stuck at the trying part of things where they have all these cool ideas, but they just get scared about trying it or putting it out into the world. And that's something I struggled with for a long time. I created things by myself in my room and didn't want to share them with anyone because I was too afraid. And I think something like the Fringe class we had, like, it really just kind of helped me go, like, you know what, like, if I have this silly little idea, like, just try it out and see how it goes. Like, with my mini Fringe show, it was me not having any lines or talking and just doing shadow puppetry. And so it's like, you know, just try it out and it might work, it might not work. And I think that's been really freeing for me, just kind of thinking about, like, it doesn't matter if it fails, if it succeeds, just try it out. And if you were happy with it, then that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's awesome. You can do it is a great takeaway.
Yeah.
And how are you all feeling walking into TK Fringe in the next few days?
I'm feeling very excited. I'm lucky enough to not be performing in my show, which probably helps with me not feeling as nervous because I just wrote it. So I'm very, very excited for my two friends who are in the show to get up on stage and perform it because I'm at the point with the show where I'm done. The show's written. They know their lines. So now I get to just sort of sit back and watch it become its own thing and watch audiences see it for the first time. So I'm really eager. I'm very, very excited. Of course, a little nervous because you never know what people are going to think. And now it's something that I've worked on for so long that it's very close to my heart. But yeah, just very, very excited to finally get it out of the rehearsal space and out of practices and hear what people have to say about it, good or bad, because you can learn so much either way. But obviously, I hope people like it.
Yeah, like Sarah, I also am not performing in the show that I have in the TK Fringe, but I'm also really excited. I have a great team of actors and other people on the production that I'm really grateful to have be working with. I just finished my tech last night, so things are getting in gear. And of course, any kind of like creation of your own art is a really vulnerable thing when people are watching it and now you're receiving their thoughts, but that's sort of just the you have to try and see how it's received attitude of Fringe. And so I'm really looking forward to starting the festival and seeing everybody else's work too.
Yeah, as the only person here who's performing in their own show, I am terrified. but I know I have a great show. Mm-hmm. So in my brain, I know it'll all be great. But right now, I am just so nervous because I've never done anything like this before. But yeah, I guess that's going to the nerves will probably all be over soon when I finally get out on that stage. And yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm a little more in the kind of Caitlin Sarah side of things where I guess, kind of lucky enough not to be my own show in the sense of nerve-wise. And like, I'm kind of that nervous excited where I think I'm more excited than nervous, partly because I'm not in it and I just wrote it and I get to kind of just watch other people perform my work, which is just so exciting. And it also kind of helps for me, at least, that I had kind of workshopped a previous version of it before. So I know people have seen some of the songs that I have in it and have seen some of the stuff that's in it and have gotten feedback from it. So I feel really excited to put this new version out and see what people think of that one. And I'm really excited to get that feedback because I want to keep continuing to workshop it. So I think I'm mostly excited because it's so cool to see people just say your words on stage. Like, it's mm-hmm. crazy.
Sarah, Caitlin, Jonas, and Kathleen also gave a sneak peek of what audiences can expect from their shows at the festival.
My show is called The End of the Line. It opens August 2nd in Confederation Place Hotel. It stars Jake Henderson and Aiden Robert Bruce, who are two incredible actors. I couldn't ask for better people to be working on this show with, to be honest. And it follows this one guy as he gets on a train early one morning, and he sort of
strikes up a conversation with an employee who works on the train car. And you sort of, you get to watch them develop a relationship over the course of about an hour. And it's about what you can learn about other people within such a brief period of time. And you get to watch their relationship develop and see them learn who the other person is. And there's a lot of humor in it. And there's a lot of softer moments as well. And of course, there's a twist. It's also about grief and loss and learning to move on from things, I suppose. But yeah, it's mostly just about the relationship between these two people who get to meet on a train, and seeing them learn about each other. And then, how do I word this? Yeah, and also just seeing how those other themes of grief and loss and ephemerality tie in as well.
My show is called Knowing Riley, and I wrote and directed it. It opens in the Baby Grand Theater on August 2nd. The actors that I'm working with are Abby Wolf and Louis Chittis. And then I have dramaturgy by Victoria J. Marmaluk and stage management by Bethany Schaffler-Byback. And the show explores the possibility of letting people go and how there are pieces of people that we've had relationships with or friendships with in the past that last in our lives beyond maybe our relationships with those people, and just how those things stick around and live with us for the rest of our lives. And it's a really sentimental and nostalgic show, and I'm just really excited for audiences to see it.
My show, Just Add Another Lane, starring me, Jonas, and featuring Mia Leighton, is kind of an exploration on car-centric infrastructure and how cars have kind of shaped our society, looking back at how that came to be and kind of taking a step back on how we kind of accept that because it's all we've ever known. But if you try and look at it objectively, it's kind of ridiculous and absurd how much we put into it. And I kind of try and use that absurdity, that humor, to paint a picture on how society has been impacted, mostly for the worst. There's also some fun audience participation stuff. And overall, it's just a really funny, hopefully thought-provoking show. And yeah.
My show is called The Cape as Red as Blood. It's a musical and it's fully sung through. So that means there's pretty much no talking in it. It's all singing. And it's told through choreography and shadow puppetry. It's being produced by Of the Sea Productions, which is a production company that's doing other shows at Queens this year. And it's being directed, choreographed by Kira McKenzie Mavis. Why did I put the middle name in there? Sorry, Kira. And then we have costumes and vocal direction by Grace Delamere, lighting design by Elsa McKnight, and I did all the music and music direction. And then we have our actors are Haley Hatfield, Meg Gibson, Sid Chittick, Elise White, and Elsa McKnight. And the show is basically a musical retelling of Little Red Riding Hood with some feminist and environmentalist kind of undertones, or maybe not quite undertones. And yeah, it's just kind of my fun little retelling of kind of a darker than some tellings, maybe not as dark as other ones. And kind of going through this kind of reckoning with how society treats nature and how society treats women and how those kind of are similar in certain ways and how those connect, and kind of trying to, I don't know, inspire the audience to maybe make a change.
Once again, that was the students of Drama 339, Fall 2023, talking about their first TK Fringe experience. CFRC also sat down with Professor Thea Fitzjames to learn more about the course. Here's a bit of our conversation.
Well, to get us started, I was wondering if you could just give us a bit of insight into the process of getting this class running with Theatre Kingston.
Yeah, it was. So my research is on Fringe, right? So when I got hired at Queen's, there was going to be at least one class that was sort of focused on my research. It was sort of part of the gig when I got hired, and so I was sort of, do I do a solo show class, which is another thing that I do? Do I do a Fringe class? What can I offer to the Dan School from that perspective? And that allows me also as a kind of young scholar to kind of continue doing my research on Fringe. And so that was sort of what I pitched to the administration, to Julia Brooke, the director of the dance school, and she ran it. So, I've been fringing for, I mean, I guess if you talk to a lot of fringers, I've been fringing for a short time, but I've been fringing since 2015. And I mean, I've done Australia fringes as well as some fringes in the States and then like the bulk of fringes in Canada. And so, yeah, I knew if we were going to do a fringe class, we had to be connected to the local fringe. And so I know Rosemary through the theater scene, and I just reached out to her. We grabbed, I think it was breakfast and maybe a burger and a drink. And we just sort of were like, okay, let's, you know, make it a fundraiser for the department. Our little mini Fringe will be a fundraiser for the department and for Kingston Fringe, TK Theater Kingston Fringe. And then one student will get to kind of be automatically in the Fringe from the class. And so that was the sort of plan we came up with. But then all of my students put their names in the lottery. And I think there's now five Fringe shows that are all students from the TK Theo Fringe class. So I'm super delighted. It's incredible to see the interest that class has generated in Fringe.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you've been fringing as long as Kick and Push has existed, which is pretty awesome. And I asked your students this as well. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to how you would define Fringe.
I would define Fringe as I define it in kind of three ways. I think it's a festival. First of all, Fringe is primarily started right in Edinburgh, right, with the Edinburgh Fringe, which was literally a bunch of local artists putting themselves on the periphery of the Edinburgh Festival, which was a kind of international, kind of high-end, high-brow theater festival. And the locals were sort of like, well, where do we get to stage our shows? And kind of literally put themselves on the fringe of the festival and kind of, I think in a provocative way, called it, you know, the Edinburgh Fringe. And it's now the largest performance festival in the world, right? That's a huge, huge, huge festival. And so it's I would define Fringe it through primarily that lens, right? It's a performance festival. Secondarily though, it is it is everything I think that doesn't quite, that you wouldn't quite identify as mainstream, right? So I think when we were talking about it in class, I had this great definition that was like frippery, robbery, like all these kind of like everything that is a little outside of or slightly marginalized compared to what might be defined as mainstream. And so for me, Fringe is really, in its practice, a interdisciplinary arts festival, and specifically performance art festival. So it's very rare that you see dance next to clown, next to puppetry, next to stand-up comedy, but you get that with Fringe. But then it's also things that it's like, because the artists have total creative control, there's no kind of gatekeepers, artistic gatekeepers in Fringe. Because of that, you get just like weird, wonderful art, and people just really taking risks and trying new things. And so for me, Fringe, what I love about Fringe is that it's almost feels like raw performance, and you get the good with the bad with that, right? You get just like really amazing shows and just some really bad Fringe shows. And I think that's part of the ecosystem of Fringe. You can't have, if you didn't have the bad Fringe shows, it wouldn't be the same. It's really kind of that environment of festival and performance.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, your students sort of went through this whole roller coaster in one semester. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to how you guided your students through this course and, you know, basically what they went through the last few months to get their shows on stage.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it was a fall semester class, and there was no commit. There was no, you know, they didn't have to do a Fringe show. It was totally optional for them. So I think that's why I'm so delighted of of 11 students, I think six of them are in the Fringe. And I think one of the one who's not is, I think another seventh is volunteering for Kick and Push. And so they're all really involved. And they're representing five different shows. But I asked a lot of them. It was a one semester course. And I really was trying to think of like, what is it? How do Fringe artists, which are a unique kind of category of artists in Canada that we don't talk about a lot, how do they make their art? And so, you know, you have like a traditional theater thing, you'll have like a script that's already written that you then turn in, you do auditions and you have a director and a stage manager and all this stuff. In Fringe, that model doesn't always work because it's expensive, right? And because you're splitting the box office, you can't actually pay all those people. And so for me, I was really curious to be like, what is a kind of methodology of performance around Fringe? So we started the first month with just reading. We didn't do any creation, right? It's a 3-month semester. First month, we just read about, we saw a bunch of Fringe shows. We talked to a lot of like legendary Fringers, Jem Rolls, TK Daw, like some really incredible storytellers and kind of spoken word poets that have been doing Fringe, that do Fringe as their full-time job. And we read a lot of the kind of the controversy around Fringe, around whether the lottery is inclusive and, you know, how we may maintain safety on the Fringe, specifically through kind of consent culture, which is some of my area of interest, right? So we spent a month doing that, just reading. And then I made them debate each other, which they hated. but we survived somehow. And then starting in October, with our show date, our little mini Fringe festival being November 22nd, starting in October, that's when I'm like, okay, we can start to write our shows. So they had a very, very condensed creation time. This is on top of like four other classes they're taking, right? Like, and so the goal was to make a 20 minute show. They could work together, but they all decided to do solo shows, which to me, I blame myself because I only showed them solo show examples because I'm a solo artist. So I just know a lot more people who do that work. And starting in October, we did a couple of collective creation activities. We did content creation activities. I brought in my good friend, Jimmy Hogg, who's a storyteller, and we did a storytelling kind of comedy workshop. We sort of showed each other our work back and forth. And then we had a little mini 2-day Fringe festival where they all shared their work and we turned Theological Hall into a little Fringe hub. It was super, super magical. It was a really, really positive experience for the students. And then at the end, we had a cast party, and that was part of our class time, because that to me is the beauty of theater, is that actually you should be celebrating your wins. You know, there's these intense, condensed, busy times that then you need to like celebrate at the end. And so we finished with a cast party and a class critique. The idea being that when you open your show in the Fringe, that's the start of the creative process. You're starting to build an understanding of what your show is in front of an audience. And you're starting to then workshop your show live, which a lot of Fringers do in the Canadian tour. You know, they'll workshop their show in Montreal so that by the time they get to Winnipeg and Edmonton, like it's really sharp and they know what they're doing. Similarly, some Australian or some folks do the Australian Fringes to workshop their show for Edinburgh, right? And that's this idea of building a show with an audience is to me a big part of a kind of Fringe methodology.
A lot of your students said it was a very unique class, and they all kind of agreed that their key takeaway was, I can do it. That was the key takeaway for all of them. And I was wondering if you could speak a bit to the importance of adding this class to the Dance School of Drama repertoire and how it can help students walk out into the world with new skills.
It's a great question. I'll note, when you make students build a show in 3 weeks, they realize they can build a show in 3 weeks, right? And that there's actually some power to that kind of urgency and kind of immediacy of performance, that you can be so responsive, right? And you don't need to sweat the small stuff. You can just put it up and see what happens. And that's very much how I work. Thinking about like, what is the pathway for for drama students, realistically, like, are we expecting, you know, there's not a lot of positions for actors, for instance, there's minimal theater positions just kind of nationally. Right. And so teaching, you know, the students to be, yes, actors in a solo show, but also entrepreneurs of their own work, also, you know, technicians and building the tech views, like teaching them to do it all, to me allowed hopefully allowed them to realize they can do quite a bit, you know, that and diversify their skills so they can apply them kind of in different ways should they choose to go into the theater industry. And then also, you know, there's a lot of fringes and a bunch of them are, you know, going to be making a certain amount of money on their fringe shows in an upcoming week. The dance school and the theater department offers a really compelling drama education, and performance should be a key part of that, and building your own performance and not just thinking like, oh, how am I going to be a director for this show or how am I going to be an actor for this show? But what kind of artist am I? What kind of stories do I want to tell? What is interesting to me? What do I think is worthy being staged? How do I, you know, how do I honor an audience in 20 minutes and say thank you for coming through performance and just tell a really good story or create a really cool experience? So for me, that is really what the potential of a creation class, even in a BA program as opposed to a BFA, right? Is that like we're not just creating actors, we're not just creating sound designers or stage managers, we're creating artists. And even if you don't go into the arts, like what a skill to be able to then kind of live a life with creativity, which I think will always be valuable.
How are you feeling going into Fringe this year, both with your own show and with your students right there with you?
Well, I'm like, truly, we were all flyering at an event on this past Saturday. They did the kick and push launch and all my little baby fringers were there with their flyers, handing out flyers. And it was really nice. Like, it was really exciting. So I'm like, truly delighted that it's had such a positive impact. And I'm premiering a new show. This will be my third solo show. It's called Crazy Bee Boss Bee, and you can guess what the B stands for. You can probably intuit what the B stands for. But it's a feminist solo show that explores the intersection between workaholism, femininity, and mental health. It's a really sharp and quick show. It's the most amount of words I've ever said in the least amount of time. So it really moves. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm super nervous. I always get nervous. I'm like, I've been doing this for ages and I'm so nervous to premiere a new show. And then I'm actually going to Edmonton Fringe after this, and I'm bringing Deanna Serby, who is both my stage manager, and she has a show in the Fringe Festival, in Kingston Fringe Festival, called My One and Only, which is a kind of beautiful storytelling show about a lesbian couple and sort of like throughout their lifetime, you know, not just kind of looking at not just stereotyping lesbians, but like looking at this kind of beautiful lifetime story of this specific couple. Anyway, so she's going to come to Edmonton with me. And so I'm hoping that she'll catch the bug and get like really into Fringe, and that the mentorship continues beyond my class, and that we get to sort of see some great shows in Fringe. But yeah, it's truly a blessing to have all my little darlings making theater, you know, and taking names and, you know, trying to sell their tickets and being disappointed at ticket sales, because that's part of it, you know, and it builds resiliency for this kind of work, because it's not easy to be an artist, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, right? I'm thrilled to see them all enjoying it, and I can't wait to see their shows. Oh my god, my schedule is packed. It's like chaos. I have to see all their shows.
While dance students will still be getting hands-on experience this upcoming year, the TK Theo Fringe course is not set to run.
I'm no longer at the dance school is the kind of elephant in the room. Unfortunately, they couldn't, you know, with all the dance school cuts, they couldn't offer me full-time work. And so I'm relocating somewhere else that can. I'm going to the University of Saskatchewan. But yeah, so I mean, I think someone else could absolutely teach a Fringe course, but I think because I'm not there to sort of really push for it, it's not happening. However, there is going to be a creation course.
All TK Fringe show details and tickets are available on the Theatre Kingston website. And once again, the Fringe portion of the Kick and Push Festival will be running until August 11th. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
It is 12 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Views expressed in this syndicated program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of CFRC 101.9 FM, Radio Queen's University.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC 101.9 FM, www.cfrc.ca, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
The Corridor is an award-winning news program hosted by Dinah Jansen and Jesse Bell, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. With contributions from